honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode in honor of the 82nd anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. The tie that I wore this December 7th belonged to a very special Pearl Harbor survivor named Mickey Ganich. His widow Barbara gave it to me after his passing, and that's not the only way she has extended Mickey's legacy. Barbara was the keynote speaker on Pearl Harbor Day at the Navy Hale Keiki School in Honolulu, where Mickey had made an annual habit of captivating those elementary students with his memories of December 7th, 1941, aboard the battleship USS Pennsylvania.
We were ready to play a game. We had a game out on the ship's football team, and made the first team on. I wasn't very big. That's pretty big. That's 170 pounds there. That was big in those days. Now, if you're not 250, you're nothing there. So I joined the ship's football team, and we had a great team. And we scheduled to play USS Arizona for a fleet football championship, 1 o'clock, December 7, 1941. That was going to be the Super Bowl of the Navy. It was really important there. So we was going to do a little scrimmage and get ready for the game and leave the ship at 8 o'clock in the morning, December 7. There was no place to change clothes. A little field was close by to us there. So we had all our padding on for the attack. When the attack came there, you go to your battle station. You don't have time to change clothes or anything. So up in the crow's nest, I went in my football uniform, all my padding on there, little trap door to get up there, pull myself through to get up there. That was my battle station. I was a lookout. Whether you're in port or not there, you go where your battle station is. We'd been talking for months there, whether we're getting a war or not, and we figured no one would bother us there. We got 8 battleships in port there. We're a powerful country. Would be crazy to try to attack us. If there would be any problem at all, it'd be in the Philippines, so we don't have to worry about it. So what the policy was during the week there, the ships would go out to sea and maneuver around, the gunnery practice and all that, and be in port on the weekends there. The whole fleet would be in port practically. The only thing is, except for the aircraft carriers were not in port. They were taking planes. Admiral Halsey, when his aircraft carrier group were taking planes to Midway and Wake Island, so they were not in port. Fortunately, because that was the reason there that they were not in port, why there was an O-3rd attack, an attack on Pearl Harbor, because the aircraft carriers were not in port. The third attack for the aircraft carriers was number one target, and oil fields and repair facilities.
Which would have crippled
If that would have happened, we would have lost the war. We'd be talking Japanese now, because they would have took the war because the closest oil and closest repair facilities, 2,000 miles away, it would have been a disaster there. We were very fortunate, but bad weather had slowed the aircraft carriers up. And they were not in port. If it had been good weather, they'd been in port, we'd have been attacked. We'd have lost the war. It's that simple.
So let's talk about how the farm boy from Ohio experienced this. You just turned 22 a few weeks before that.
Yeah.
So you're in your football pads getting ready for a scrimmage before the big game with the Arizona at 1. And what was your first indication that the Japanese were there?
Well, about 6 minutes to 8, the phone rang. I picked up the phone. One of the fellows on the deck was up on deck of our gang, called on and said, Japanese attack in Pearl Harbor. I said, oh, come on, let's not talk about it, because we'd been talking about it for months there, but we feared there's no chance for us. About that time, the ship shuddered. Some of our fellows that were close to the guns went to the guns and started shooting at the planes before we knew, below decks, knew what was going on. About that time, general quarters went, all hands man your battle stations. Now, get from there up to the poles there, what you, I guess you'd call it there, the mast there with the crow's nest. That's where I had to go. So by the time I got up there, ships were burning, planes were burning, planes were flying around there. Look close enough, you hit them with rocks. If you had anything to throw at them, I could have thrown my binoculars at them, because I was a lookout. That was all I had up there. But by the time I got up there, just a few minutes time, because you're going and you're going double time or triple time, get up there in a hurry because you don't know what was going on. It was pretty hectic.
Yeah.
But I was well protected with all my padding on.
All your football pads.
Oh, yeah. A little trap door to get through there. Pull myself through with all the padding on. I couldn't go straight through. It wasn't that wide. So I pulled myself through with my trap door and get up there. And it was kind of bad looking, seeing planes coming all around you. And it got pretty rough. But the Japanese didn't know where we were the first attack that they had, because we weren't in our normal place. But evidently, some of the Japanese pilots reported to the aircraft carrier that there's a big ship in dry dock with two other destroyers. So the second attack, they hit us. Bomb missed me by 45 feet. Armor-piercing bomb, 500-pound bomb, came on past me. I'm on the course, and I said, came way down, exploded way below me. If it exploded on contact, I wouldn't be here talking to you. It's kind of scary to see a big hole alongside of you there.
So but, if it had been a conventional bomb as opposed to armor-piercing, it would have gone off on the deck, and you would have been gonzo.
Yeah.
And as it stands, you're up on this crow's nest. So when that bomb detonates below deck, I'm sure that was quite an earthquake for you.
It really shook me, but we didn't know where it hit, because if I saw the bomb coming, I probably died right there. But it came on past me, and I saw the result of it, but I didn't see it happening.
And this whole time, because of your elevated position, you're seeing a whole lot of other things.
Yeah. In fact, my job was to look how to report anything of interest there. I could report or what it is of phones on the ship itself. It's sound-powered phones is what it is. I would see the plane coming over the top of the buildings, because the building's fairly close to us, too. I saw this plane coming over the top of the buildings. I reported to it there. They turned the guns around, facing that direction. When he came past his building, pow, we got him. That's the only plane we knocked down there. If they had trained the guns around to get the plane, they never had it, but they had the guns trained in that direction. So when the plane come over that way, they got him. They were ready for him.
And you gave him a good scouting report.
Yeah. That made me feel pretty good. I did accomplish something.
Well, and if you hadn't, that plane might have done something to your ship, too.
That's right.
You know, you hear a lot about D-Day as the longest day, but I'm wondering how long December 7th, 1941 felt for you.
It felt pretty long there, but we're just glad, because in between, there was about a 10-15 minute gap in between the first attack and second attack. So I had a chance to look around and get below and change clothes, get out of my football uniform on and get in my regular clothes. And then you didn't really have time to think about it. But I saw the results there. I saw the hole alongside me where the bomb came. Saw machine gun nicks in the ladder where I climbed up to get up to the crow's nest. Whether it happened before I went up there, after I went up there, or during the time I went up, I don't know, but they didn't get me. That's kind of scary, too.
Yeah.
But we didn't see what could have happened there, but I figured God had other plans for me. He's looking out for me.
The late, great Mickey Gannich. And now let's hear the keynote address from the 82nd anniversary commemoration of Pearl Harbor this year, delivered by a young Marine Corps pilot named Ray Hauer.
When you saw the program this morning, I'm sure many of you wondered why a 29-year-old Marine Corps captain was selected to be the keynote speaker here today. And I don't blame you. Because when Mr. McCoy from the 82nd Commemoration Planning Committee asked me to speak, I wanted the same thing. One thing I knew for sure is I wasn't selected for my speaking ability. So why am I up here? Well, when Mr. McCoy informed me the theme for the remembrance ceremony today was Legacy of Hope, it became clear. For those of you who have read the program, bear with me. For those of you who haven't, let me introduce myself and perhaps answer that question. My name is Captain Ray Hauer. I'm a Marine Corps AV-8B Harrier pilot. I'm the son of Colonel Ray Hauer, a Marine Corps F-4 Phantom Rio and F-18 Hornet pilot. I'm the grandson of Lieutenant Colonel Ray Hauer. a Marine Corps A-4 Skyhawk pilot who flew combat missions in Vietnam before losing his life in service to our country. I am also the great-nephew of Lieutenant Commander Louis Contour, a Navy PBY Catalina pilot who flew in the Pacific during World War II. At 102 years old, my Uncle Lou is the last surviving crew member of the USS Arizona that lies beneath these waters. As I stand before you, I represent them and their legacy. The cufflinks and captain's bars I'm wearing today are my father's. The Eagle Globe and anchors on my collar and cover are my grandfather's. And the wings of gold I wear upon my chest are the very wings my Uncle Lou earned on November 15th, 1942. I am proud to be a third-generation Marine Corps pilot and naval aviator. That is why I'm up here with you today. As you think about the theme, Legacy of Hope, one can't help but wonder, what were the hopes of those serving in and around Pearl Harbor prior to and after the attack? I imagine as many went to sleep Saturday night, their hopes were the same as many of the service members serving all over the world today. Some went to sleep hoping for a good night's rest, or simply just a good breakfast in the ship's mess in the morning. Some hope to make the service a career. Others hope to do their tour of duty and return home. I'm sure some hope the U.S. would be able to stay out of the war. Some just hope the Chicago Bears would defeat the Chicago Cardinals that Sunday. Perhaps there were even a few who had a little too much fun Saturday night, and they just hoped the room would stop spinning. But at 7:55, Sunday morning, December 7th, as these skies were blackened with the first wave of 183 Japanese aircraft, and the morning quiet was disrupted by the roar of their engines, those hopes were dashed. As the bombs fell and their torpedoes swam through these waters en route to their target, those hopes were dashed. As the explosions began, and the very skies, as the explosions began, and the skies filled with smoke and flames, and this very harbor in front of you was set ablaze, those hopes were dashed. And the calls from the injured and dying, to the commands to man battle stations and free lines, to the crackling of return fire and a fleeting attempt to thwart the attack, those hopes were dashed. In a moment, the hopes of Saturday night were replaced by a new hope, a more urgent hope, the hope to survive. The next day, Congress declared war. Our nation, that was not ready for and wanted no part of a war, found itself at war. Our Pacific Fleet had to be rebuilt, and the war machine necessary to achieve victory had to be constructed. Those that survived that initial attack were joined by volunteers from across our nation. And as the stories of their courage and valor on the seas, in the skies, and on the battlefields around the globe, it brought new hope, a hope for victory. Our nation rallied behind the troops in their determination. At home, from the cities, farms, and factories across our country, everyone was encouraged by their spirit and sacrifice to provide the materials, tools, and financial resources necessary to support the war effort. Through the hope the troops created, our nation came together as never before or since, and the greatest generation was born. Our country is united in purpose, and with the help of our allies, was ultimately victorious in turning back evil. But they weren't done. After years of war, our nation and the world needed rebuilding and healing. Those that fought for our freedom returned home and threw themselves into that task with the same determination. The legacy of hope that was born here at Pearl Harbor, grown throughout the war and blossomed, and out of the devastation, it paved the way for a new hope, the hope for a just and lasting peace. Sharing in that hope, Japan, once our most reviled enemy, ultimately became one of our staunchest allies. People around the world longed for a lasting peace. 51 countries joined together in an effort to build such a peace. Today, we strive for that lasting peace. As Americans, We're almost all descendants of the greatest generation, and we have inherited their legacy of hope. It is incumbent upon us to honor it, learn from it, and carry it forward to make our world a more peaceful place. With that legacy also comes the responsibility to stand ready to defend peace. For those of you that served in the past, know this. The men and women who wear the nation's uniforms today take that duty as seriously as you did all those years ago. Today, we remember Pearl Harbor and pay tribute to the 2,390 Americans who died here. We reflect on their acts of courage and heroism, both told and untold. We mourn their loss and the lives they never got to live. As we honor them, we also remember that Sunday, December 7th, was just day one. Those that survived day one went on to serve all around the globe, drawing from the strengths from the memories and the sacrifices of those who never left these islands. Many survivors of that infamous Sunday ultimately perished in far-off lands. Others survived the 4 years of war to eventually return home, and we are honored and blessed to have some of them with us here today. It has been 82 years since that fateful Sunday morning. That is quite literally a lifetime ago. With each passing day, we lose more of our greatest generation. It won't be long before these true heroes that are with us today and at home will only live in our hearts, memories, and history books. So it is only fitting that I close by thanking you. Whenever my Uncle Lou or any other veteran of World War II is recognized or thanked for their service, they humbly answer, "We just did what we had to do." Fair enough, but the fact that you did it, the sacrifices you made, the courage and heroism you showed, the determination to succeed that you demonstrated, the lives sacrificed by the fallen, the legacy that you all built remains unmatched and a lesson that keeps on teaching. Let there be no misunderstanding. Without you just doing what you had to do and the victory you won for us all, we would not enjoy the freedom, opportunity, and prosperity we have today. On behalf of a grateful nation, I thank you for the gifts you have given us and the legacy we inherit. May God bless you all, and may God bless America.
Amen. That is Captain Ray Hauer, great-nephew of our last living survivor from the USS Arizona, Lou Conter, with the keynote speech at this year's commemoration on Oahu. If you'd like to watch that complete ceremony, I have a link for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that on Pearl Harbor Day and every day, freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.